Hi, my name is John.
And my name's Chris.
And this is Stay on Target.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stay on Target. We are your hosts.
You can find us online on stayontargetpodcast.com.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And
this is Right-tober.
Yeah, it is Right-tober.
We talked all about that last week.
Yes.
On the show.
So this week, we are continuing that theme.
Yes, with the awesomeness.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that have happened this week.
Yeah, a lot of things have happened this week.
Like a bunch.
Yeah, yeah.
There was like, we had like a movie night where we watched some Guy Ritchie movies.
Did we tweet about that?
I don't know if we tweeted about that or not, but we should have.
We are failing.
We should have live tweeted all of those.
Hashtag fail.
Hashtag fail.
At Right-tober.
Hashtag fail-tober.
Fail-tober?
There you go.
All right.
There's a lot of comics that came out this week, which we'll be talking about a little bit later.
Alien Isolation came out this week.
Dude, you've been spending some time with Alien Isolation. That was literally right after the movie night. You went straight to GameStop.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yep, I did.
What was the situation at GameStop whenever you arrived?
Most of the people were there to pick up NBA 2K.
That's 15. Funny.
Yeah, so most of them were not there for Alien Isolation. And the few who were there for Alien Isolation were not picking it up on Xbox One.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So you picked it up on Xbox One, though.
Yep.
What was there like a difference in performance? I don't know. I haven't seen anything about that. So.
Exactly the same on both systems.
Nice. And so that was a big hullabaloo this week as well, whenever Assassin's Creed came out and said that it's going to run Unity, the new game that's coming out in, was that November? I think it's November, or is it later this month? Might be later this month.
No idea.
Either way, but it's going to run at 900p.
Yeah.
On both consoles.
Yeah.
Both PS4 and Xbox One.
They kind of tried to like slide that in and stab Microsoft in the back. Be like, we didn't want to avoid all the arguments, so we just made it both on the same on both consoles. Which, you know, here up till now, like the one who's been doing 900p all the time is the Xbox. And then, you know, like that was the game's director, I think, or one of the developers has said that. But then Ubisoft came out and was like, hey, this was a design choice. We had just have a bunch of people on screen.
Do you think that's a lie? Like that it was a design choice? Or do you think it was more of a, more of like what the guy originally said, where it's like it just couldn't handle it on both. And so they decided to lock it at both. So
it could be either one. You know, you never know with these things.
Yeah.
You know, that could just be like a wild assumption that this guy made.
Yeah.
That, you know, or he was in secret talks.
With Microsoft.
With top men.
Well, I mean, he might not have wanted to like upset Microsoft too, because it's like every time that news comes out, obviously Microsoft isn't happy.
No.
But it's not, it's not Sony's fault.
Right.
So
I don't know. You know, we'll who cares? You know, yeah. Like to me, a bigger difference in games is the frame rate issues. You know, like, you know.
Well, even Tomb Raider, whenever we reviewed Tomb Raider back earlier this year, that had some major frame rate
differences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that's a bigger deal to me than actual resolution. But this is the thing, you know, I love my Xbox One, and like that's where I play my multi-platform games, and you know, a resolution is not necessarily going to change that.
That's true. And the difference between 900p and 1080 is probably negligible. Like I don't think I would be able to tell if I was looking at one of each, you know? So, something else we have is Surge, Chris. We referenced this a number of weeks back.
Yes.
And we keep forgetting it. Yes, we keep forgetting it. It was in the fridge last week, and we forgot it. So grab a couple glasses there.
Yeah. So we have a can of Surge here. It came back. Okay. It was around in the 90s, right?
Yes.
And it came back, and we have a can from Amazon. Amazon brought it back. I'm going to you're going to hear the top pop. Yeah, this is a soda with the deal with it was it had like more sugar and caffeine than any other soda on the market at the time.
Oh yeah, that's good noise.
There we go. Let's take a pour here.
Ooh, sounds like sugary, caffeiney.
Take a whiff of that.
It's like a fine wine.
what does it smell like?
Dude, it smells like Surge. Like,
smell like you remember?
I think I mentioned before, like, that I had an experience with Surge, and like one of the like classic Surge moments in my mind. Ooh. Woo! That is sugary. Wow. It goes straight to my jaw. Wow. Anyway, so one of my classic like moments with Surge back in the day was whenever I was a whenever I was at a camp. I was a kid and I was at like a music camp. It was this camp you go away to a college for a week or whatever, and they like halfway through the week, top men, as you said earlier, got together and they decided that this Surge drink was unhealthy for all of the kids at this camp. And so,
but the other sodas were okay.
Well, yes, but all of the other sodas were okay. But Surge, that was just too far. And so they banned Surge, and they had the college campus like remove Surge from all of the vending machines.
Yeah,
like all of that stuff. And so, like, I'll call it my my Surge Sodabition occurred, in which kids started like selling Surge out of their like dorm rooms.
They created a black market.
They did. They created the prohibition. Like at the time, I was just a kid. I didn't know anything about the prohibition or anything like that. But that was that situation.
Yeah.
Like there were these kids with like big supplies of Surge, and they were like selling them at a premium rate.
So this is the a lot more green than I remember.
Me too.
It's a lot darker green.
Less yellow.
Yeah.
More green.
And has a decidedly like just straight up lime,
yeah,
smell to it, kind of like, you know, like a lime popsicle almost.
Well, it says like citrus flavored soda, but it's very lime, which is limes a citrus.
Are citrus,
yes, which is a citrus. But it's like whenever I envision citrus, I mainly think of lemon lime or like
yeah, exactly. Like, you
almost
know,
even a orange hint, you know, that sort of thing. But I don't know, get
it,
that
it can
here.
Be many things. I think because okay. Mountain Dew is
citrus,
citrusy. So mm-hmm. is. Sprite and 7-Up, those are considered citrusy.
Straight from Amazon.
So this is, it also, like, I don't know, like, the taste is not as strong as I remember.
No, it doesn't, like, bite your tongue off like no, before. It's very syrupy almost, mm-hmm. you know? The other thing about that camp experience was that late in the week, like, the last day, I, among a couple of other friends, discovered the mystical place where they had forgotten a soda machine. They had forgotten to take Surge out of the soda machine. But it was like in one of these areas that was like, obviously you weren't supposed to go. You know, the doors like in hotels where like there's everything's carpeted, very manicured. Like you're obviously supposed to be in this area and it's comfortable for you.
Yeah.
And then there's a door that opens and it's like the walls are that color and there's like fluorescent lighting and linoleum floors and, you know, that sort of thing. Like yeah. taupe walls, like.
Yeah.
There was a soda machine behind one of those doors
yeah.
that had Surge in it. And yeah. and so like you felt like you were getting away with something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you give this on the Stay on Target
on rating the review, system? On the review scale?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it about a 5.
Yeah. to say, I'm kind of there as well.
Where it's like you present me with options, I will never choose this.
It's kind of a 5.5 maybe a 6.
I'm leaning the opposite way. Like
you're going down further.
Like if it was to lean anyway, it would go like into the 4s for me.
Yeah.
Just because I just don't like the taste that much.
Like
you look at the other caffeinated sodas like Full Throttle, and it's just there's a lot of flavors out there.
Yeah.
This does not seem like one of those flavors that I'm, you know.
The weird
amped
thing
about.
Is this doesn't really hit my nostalgia button as mm-mm. hard as I thought it was going to.
Me neither.
I was pretty excited about this.
Yeah.
Build
you up to let you down.
I don't know, John. I don't know.
Thanks, Amazon. This is juice straight from the Amazon.
We'll see. We'll see.
You think? We'll see. Okay. So, do you think in the vast majority of areas, like I realize, like inner, like in city, big metropolitan areas, Amazon food delivery is a big thing. Like people will have their food just delivered to them from Amazon to their doorstep. And that may be moving into the drone era as well.
Amazon, like, green, I don't know. It's called, like, Green Fresh or something like that.
Yes.
Something, Amazon Fresh.
Something fresh.
Amazon
you know?
Fresh, that's what it is.
Fresh from the Amazon.
Nope, that's something completely different.
Yes. So anyway, like, outside of those areas, is buying Surge going to catch on? Like, where you don't always, like, you don't buy foodstuffs, like, in the area where you don't buy food from Amazon, really.
I mean, it sold out in like minutes because I think that they wanted their nostalgia button hit.
But do you think this is going to actually do it?
Catch on?
Yeah.
No. I mean, no. Well, I mean, it obviously worked and I think they'll bring, I mean, I'm not going to say I wouldn't drink another one. I don't know that, like you have to buy them at a case at a time And I don't know that I would do that.
You don't think you'd buy a case?
No.
But if somebody had one, you would be like, yeah, I'll take a surge.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like if it was sitting there.
If it's the choice between this and motor oil, you're obviously choosing
If it's this between this and sewer water, I'm obviously
some other unknown green liquid.
The surge. Yeah. Some kind of radioactive waste. Yeah, I'm going to go with the surge.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've spent a long time on this for a not food podcast.
I'm sorry.
So, John, what's been going on this week besides the things we've already talked about?
Besides the movie night, besides a lot of stuff like that.
What have you been doing? What have you been
reading, up to?
Playing?
Oh, man. Well, playing. I've been playing a little bit of Destiny. Not a whole lot. I've been playing some Fire Emblem Awakening on my DS, my 3DS. Yeah. Oh, so that's really fun, you know. What about you? Have you been doing anything?
I saw Gone Girl.
Nice. We talked about that last week. How was it, dude?
Phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
Man, I'm close to saying it's David Fincher's best.
Right on.
It's also, I think, his most conventional movie.
Okay. I was going to say, where does this fall in the kind of the David Fincher, like in his, he's a wide range of like dark movies. I mean, they're all obviously dark, but it's like, where does this fall in the range of David Fincher, like movies and darkness?
Yeah, so compare like, it to maybe on the range other stuff. From Fight Club to Benjamin Button. I say this lands squarely more on the Benjamin Button side of things, where it's not as shocking. Mm-hmm. You know, like you watch Fight Club the first time, it's just shocking at how violent it is.
Yeah.
You know, this is not that.
Okay.
But it is still like very intriguing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a mind bender for sure. Like, oh man. And there are several really cool parts, like really, really cool parts in this movie.
Like big, I mean, obviously like no spoilers.
Incredible scenes.
But like twisting, that sort of thing. Does it have twists?
Does that spoil it if I tell you if it has twists?
I don't know. I mean, it's like you go to, I feel like a David Fincher movie, it's like
always has
twists. Lindelof movie where it's like, yes, it's going to have twists, but it's like.
So yes, there are twists.
Are they good?
Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
Cool.
And honestly, like, you know, at least me personally, you just don't know what's going on for a large part of the movie.
Right on.
And there's one scene in particular that is just, you know, incredible.
Yeah.
It's rated, you know, this movie's rated R for a reason. So if you, you know, have a problem with rated R movies, you know, definitely check it out before you go see this blindly on my recommendation.
Right.
But
basically don't call up Chris and go, "Hey, I was going to see this movie.
Why'd you tell me to see this movie?"
I was like, okay, so the critics, or there was a critic, I saw a trailer for it.
Yeah.
And it said, the date night movie of the year. And I'm thinking, I don't know if that's, accurate.
This is not like a, you know, lovey-dovey, you know,
chick flick is what I think of whenever I think of like date movie. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe we're going to the wrong date movies, but who knows? Like, this is a dark movie for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not lighthearted. There is no lightheartedness in this movie.
There you go.
I'm not saying it's not funny, because it is. Yeah. At times it can be very funny.
I was about to say, we've got a lot of comedians in this, actually. We've got...
What's funny... Oh, I mean, still... man, without going into a whole review, the cast is great.
Yeah.
You know, like you have Ben Affleck, who gave, man, one of the best performances of his career. I feel like he just keeps one-upping himself. Rosamund Pike, amazing. Did great job.
Yeah.
I think the standout of this was Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
His character, like you think you know what his character is going to be whenever he shows up and how he's going to act, and it's completely different.
Mm.
Great casting job. I say, like, Neil Patrick Harris did a good job.
I've heard mixed reviews about his performance, though. Well, like, did it take you out of the movie whenever he came on?
No.
Okay.
I think he could have played up certain aspects of his character a little more.
Cool.
I think he's a little too normal, like for his character is supposed to be very eccentric, and he plays it a little more toned down. Now, like that comes through in other ways, his eccentricity, but I think he could have been a little more overt with it. That's just based on my first viewing of this movie.
Yeah.
I need to watch it again to properly make that assessment now that I know what's going on in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
So
makes sense. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. I've been wondering, and I will probably see that in the next couple weeks. Another thing I wanted to say throughout there that I've been up to, I finished The Walking Dead season 4.
John.
This is okay, so this time of year, October, is the time of year that I binge watch all of The Walking Dead, like the previous season of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And so like that started, and like I had watched live, like I'd watched up until that midway point.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned that they changed showrunners at that point. And so like this, you know, everything kind of happens and all the way to the end, and I got to that ending moment and I was like, oh my gosh. It was amazing. I'm thinking that this is the season that I need to stay on board and like watch as it happens.
So,
but I always think that to a certain extent. Let me throw that out there.
I want to discuss this for a second. So if you don't want to hear spoilers of The Walking Dead, okay, fast forward for a second. Okay?
So what I will do,
yes.
How long do you want to talk about it? And we'll set a timer and then we'll stop talking after that timer.
No more than 5 minutes.
Okay. So I'm going to hit 5 minutes.
Okay.
And after 5 minutes, we are done. So
skip
three,
forward 5 minutes.
Two, one.
Okay. All right, we're spoiling this right now.
Yeah.
Dude,
the ending. Crazy.
Okay, so.
Not what I expected. Completely not what I expected.
No, at all.
Because you kept like building this thing up as like, this is one of the best hours of television I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed.
Yeah.
And like, it was one of the best hours of television, but it wasn't what I thought it was.
Yes. So it starts off very low key. And it doesn't, you know, like, you don't think it's going to turn into anything.
Right.
And then you start seeing these pieces fall together from all these episodes you've just watched.
Yeah. I mean, this is the back half of the season we're talking about.
Yeah, here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then freaking Rick bites somebody's neck off.
Dude, that was nuts. Like, that whole moment where you realize that they're, you know, I think it was like two episodes earlier that you realize that they're hunting Rick.
Yeah.
And Daryl is in with them.
Yeah.
And like, and you're like, this is going to be a bad situation no matter what happens.
I thought they were done, man.
Yeah.
I thought someone was going to die.
Yeah, me too.
And they were all going to get really messed up.
Well, I thought that for sure, like, somebody was going to get it. Like, I thought Daryl maybe, or like Michonne or something like that. But you know, I was very surprised.
I was like, I give the show props for creating a genuine no-win situation. Like,
right.
There is no way out of this.
Right.
In conventional thinking,
right?
You know, like, you think of the normal ways to get out of this, there is none.
Right.
Like,
they even tried it. Like, they tried the normal way, and it was like there was nothing. You know, they couldn't talk their way out of it. They couldn't even fight their way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, you have this moment with the governor, like earlier in the season, where, you know, it's obviously on one person's shoulders, and it's obviously like the governor. There was a way out of that.
Yeah.
You know,
up until this
the governor
point,
just attacked.
You know, other than like these things where like you're overwhelmed by zombies, like those are no-win situations as well.
Mm-hmm.
But like these large, complex situations where people are being threatened and all this kind of stuff, there's always a way to fight back. And at this point, like, there is no, like, they are overpowered, they are outmanned,
right.
Like,
yeah.
They are about to watch, you know, Carl freaking get raped and then get killed themselves.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
This is a horrifying situation.
So Rick just does what Rick now understands that he has to do. I think the best part about this, where we're at in terms of Rick's mental state now, is he has come to terms with the things he has to do, but realizes he can still remain the same person and remain a normal person at the same time.
What's interesting about that is like that I love the parallel between whenever he was on at the prison and they were like started farming and things mm-hmm. like that, the parallels between him changing from this really vicious human being, this really scary guy, into a farmer, and where his son was going the same route, where he's like his really terrible, you know, terrible route, where it's like, you can see the writing on the wall. What's going to happen if they keep going this way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you maybe turn into the governor, or you turn into mm-hmm.
somebody that's afraid of.
Right. That's what he was afraid of. And so like then, they transition into this peaceful lifestyle of you know, being this farmer and being this thing. And that was really nice, paralleled with the opposite of that,
mm-hmm.
where he's transitioning out of this kind of peaceful lifestyle into this very violent thing. The biggest thing that surprised me, because like, I saw like that was the inevitable scene, was whenever they encountered that other group. But the thing that surprised me most, I think, was at the very end.
Oh yeah.
Where you get to Terminus.
Oh yeah.
You get to this supposedly safe place, and like, you're obviously, there's something that's not right.
Yep.
I mean, I put it, you know, you put it together. These people are wearing these other, you know, your other members'
clothes
and stuff. And so, like, then that whole gauntlet was nuts to me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, like, you know, they run through all those rooms and you're like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And
there's a lot there.
There's a lot there. And, like, what's interesting is the way that Terminus kind of works is it's like a spider web. It's like the center of a spider web. It, literally, like they're at where all the tracks converge, where all the people are going to go. They're sitting there waiting for the flies to come to them.
Right.
And they're going to
trap them.
And trap them. Like the ending line of that episode, though, is like literally my favorite. Like that's the kind of, like, that's what you want to hear from Rick in that moment.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's what you want. And then they give it to you.
Yeah.
Like they're just messing with the wrong people. Like he's just, he's like almost. It's hilarious. Well,
it's almost like he feels sorry for them.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know, they don't know.
They don't know what they just did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're messing with the wrong people. So we got 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're back off of the spoiler stuff.
Yep, no more spoilers.
So no more spoilers here. So you're safe from the spoilers and the spoiler monsters.
Yes, but definitely check out at least the back half of season 4 of The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great piece of television.
Yeah. So I also wanted to talk about, I got some very briefly, I got some photos back. I took a trip to Dallas this previous spring. I took a camera with me, an old Nikon, completely manual, took some black and white film and shot some three rolls of film there.
Cool.
And ended up with some pretty good shots.
Oh, dude, these are awesome.
Yeah.
And, you need to post these on the site.
Oh, yeah. I'll post some of them up. And I'm really happy with them. Like they turned out really, really well.
Dude, that looks awesome. Was this so? This wasn't with your like a digital. This was like developed film, like where you sent it in, right?
Yeah, correct.
That's awesome.
Yeah, developed. It had a local place called the Film Box here in Nashville. They are a local, just a local company that develops film and will scan it digitally and clean it up for you and do some proper balancing and stuff like that and. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, there's some really cool stuff in here, dude.
Yeah, dude. Well, thanks. I'll post some of it on stayontargetpodcast.com. Go to the article there. Maybe five of my favorite shots or something like that.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. The top five. Chris's top five.
Yes, my top five. One of my favorite ones here is this one. We were setting up for a time lapse, and you can see the city in the background through a window, and.
Some people, really like silhouettes.
That. Yeah, silhouettes against the window.
I liked the night shot that you had earlier.
Oh, yeah, that was a time lapse I did.
Was it really?
And what was cool about that, or what was hard about it, Conan was going to be there like the very next week.
Yeah.
So there's this building there that has basically lights on the outside that they can put text up there and spelling make it do different things.
Yeah.
Well, so his name would scroll and it would flash and all this kind of stuff.
Mm.
And so like I tried... several times to get like shot, and I never, you know, you can't check it afterwards, so I had to do it several times to make sure like I was getting it right. But I was trying to get it where it would say Conan,
right?
And not like be in the middle of a transition or something like that.
Well, you succeeded,
yeah, I did. It was amazing, and it was crazy because like you know, it's a four second exposure or something like that, you know, so it's a long exposure, and really happy with the way that it turned out. So,
that's awesome, man. That's awesome,
yeah.
Well, we've got to review Witches.
Yes.
And Batgirl.
Uh-huh.
But first,
the pick of the week.
Pick of the week.
John, what is your pick of the week?
My pick this week is the Arrow season opener.
Nice.
And this, like, I am very, like, I'm not, no spoilers here.
Nope.
I'm not going to spoil this thing.
Nope.
But man, people, anybody who has watched any amount of this show needs to watch this season. It's going to be awesome. It's amazing. Like, I don't know. It's like, you saw it.
Yeah.
And there's some, like, it was a good episode, and then there's some shocking stuff that happens in the last 45 seconds that just makes it a must watch.
Yeah, like, for sure. What was clear from the beginning of this episode is like, okay, this is the show that's found its footing. Like,
right.
You know, like a lot of times you'll see a show like in the first season, they kind of like, you know, I would say the second season they kind of lost their footing. Like the first season they knew they had this arc, they knew who they were.
They had a story to tell.
Yeah, they had a story to tell. Second one kind of meandered a little bit until they got Slade in.
Especially like they didn't know what to do with certain characters. Admittedly, like they've admitted it in interviews, they didn't know what to do with like Laurel's character in season two. It seems like especially with her, they know what they're doing now.
Oh yeah, for sure. And
which is great.
There's a definite specific direction with this, just from the start of the season, which you're right, is really, really cool. It sounds like you're urinating.
Yes, but it's right more now. Surge right now.
Yes. I'm really, really excited about this season. Like you can tell that the actors are maturing as actors. Yeah.
There was one big thing. We break this down on Arrow on Target, our other podcast. Yep.
Search for it on iTunes.
Head over to stayontargetpodcast.com. They're both there.
Yep.
Everything's going to be there. That's probably your main bet for the Stay on Target cinematic universe or whatever you want to call it.
Stay on Target.
That'll be all of the podcasts we ever do will end up there.
Well, true, obviously.
So videos, that sort of thing, it'll all end up there. But yeah, so the one big omission in this episode was what in the world happened to one of the characters? Because like we just don't know
from last season.
Thea is who I'm talking about. Like okay. we just don't know where she's at now.
Well, I mean, we can talk about that We'll talk about that on the Arrow podcast
on Arrow on Target. Yeah. But I do want to throw that out that there are some burning questions I have for the series that I need answered.
All right, cool.
ASAP, guys. All right. Come on,
I like it.
All right, Chris, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week, oddly enough, is Flash, the Flash on CW.
That's almost like we planned
it. Shares a universe with Arrow.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest things, man.
Yeah, so like, and they both showed up in each other's shows this week. And I like, that is what freaking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does not have. Well, number one, it doesn't have superheroes like this.
Right.
Strong, mainstream superheroes.
That are like the ultimate of their universes.
Yeah,
And I will say that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the end of last season they had what's his name on there, the director Nick Fury,
right,
showed up on there, and so it's like, but he's not
one episode
the Green Arrow.
Oh, actually, no,
you know
he showed up in the first episode as well, I think.
Yeah,
so
both, like,
two episodes out of the entire season, Nick Fury shows up. I mean, that's not
a
reason to watch all the rest of them.
Right, and he's not like a mainline, like, he's not like Thor.
He's not a superhero.
Right, he's not like the main guy of anything.
Right.
You know, he's just the director, you know.
So, like, and then what they have going for them is the fact that they both exist in each other's universes. They can pull from each other's backstory. They can pull from each other's staple of characters. They can interchange characters when they have, you know, starting last season.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. The way that they are doing that.
Yeah.
And it's cool for The Flash because they don't necessarily have to establish things that Arrow had to establish in its first season, because this world and the tone is already kind of built for them.
Yeah, it's a little bit brighter than the Arrow ever was, but that's just based on like the city is a little bit of a brighter place.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little bit more colorful of a story.
Yeah,
so
the story is a little more optimistic than, you know, the Arrow story, which is cool. Like Arrow is kind of like like a mini Batman, basically.
Right, it's like a dark kind of look.
Yeah, and then the Flash is more of a hopeful tone. I would, you know, if you want to compare him to Superman, like just with different powers, like he's kind of like that more hopeful kind of person.
Right.
My only concern with it, if you want to boil that down, is in this first episode, felt a lot like Smallville.
I was about to say you want to put it that way. It's like in Smallville. You had basically one like superpowered person,
villain,
every week, and you dealt with that person, and it was like a closed ending. So as long as we don't have like a, just a constant influx of people with powers, or like a constant influx of like, oh, now we're dealing with this person, now we're dealing with this person. You know?
We used to call it like
what was it, Freak of the Week?
Freak of the Week, yes. Yeah. With Smallville, and I'm not saying it's like Smallville in terms of production quality.
No, it's high budget.
Yeah, and it's like more in line with Arrow,
right?
And even with the acting tone, like
yeah.
I mean, this is high quality stuff.
Oh yeah,
But yeah, like I think they could easily delve into every single episode of some, oh man, well, this person with superpowers showed up. We gotta take care of that now.
Yeah.
You know, and that can only go on for so long.
Right.
Like, I can't, I that would just grate me.
Oh, of course. Well, because it's like the Smallville thing where it's like, that was cool for the first however many, but it's like, you got to do something different than this at some point.
Yeah.
It's like, I dropped off watching Smallville, you know?
Because that's what it was.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It was a predictable formula.
Oh, yeah. Every time.
Yeah. So, we'll see. But it's still my pick of the week. You should check it out. I think it's probably, both of them are available for streaming on CW.com right now for probably just this week.
Probably also on Hulu, though.
Yeah, you know, they'll be on Hulu for like, I don't know, the next 6 weeks or so, something like that, something however like long that. They keep them up. So, you should definitely check them out.
Yep.
Watch the shows. If you're at all like superheroes or good television.
And if you like podcasts about superheroes and good television.
Yes.
There's Arrow on Target, which is our returning podcast, and then the new podcast, Flash on Target.
Yep.
That might take some time to hit iTunes, actually, but just go to stayontargetpodcast.com, should be up there.
Yep. All right, John, so our main segment this week, we are talking, we haven't talked comics in a long time.
We haven't talked comics in a while.
We bring them up periodically in like the news or our pick of the week, but we haven't talked about them in our main segment.
Yep.
So this is hashtag Writetober. It's October.
Yep.
This is kind of Halloween-y time.
Yep.
And it coincides with the debut of Scott Snyder's new book, Witches.
Yes.
Spelled with a Y. But we're not going to talk about that yet. We're going to talk about Batgirl first.
Yep.
So tell me what's going on with Batgirl these days.
So Batgirl. Okay. So we've got... Batgirl was redesigned back in the summer, super popular redesign, and the new creative team kind of came on board, and they're trying to make it a very upbeat, very happy kind of a thing. It's
not as dark.
Not as dark, yeah, because it's like Gail Simone and her run, and I guess the New 52 in general, was just very dark.
It's and very adult-oriented.
Yeah, and it was very, you have these moments with these superheroes that are very much... just really dark and horror-esque almost, to where you have these bad guys
in the
coming
bat
in the Bat
staple
universe.
Of
right.
big characters.
Which was disappointing to me because that was coming off of my favorite run of Batgirl, and one of my favorite runs of comics of all time was Brian Q. Miller's Batgirl.
Before the New 52.
Before the New 52.
Yeah.
It was with Stephanie Brown as Batgirl, who used to be the spoiler, that sort of thing. But so that was one of my favorite runs, and it was this really bright, upbeat thing, and the reason it was one of my favorites was I was reading a bunch of the DC comics and they were getting darker and Superman was walking around the planet for some stupid reason.
Oh my gosh.
And this was the one
and
book.
And Wonder Woman was like, I don't know. Brand new character.
But she wasn't even like in the universe. That was like a side universe of Wonder Woman. So it wasn't even the real Wonder
Batman
Woman.
Batman wasn't Batman. It was Dick Grayson.
Yeah, but that was a cool run with.
I loved it.
I'll mention that in a second.
But in terms of the DC universe, that was a time of turmoil.
Oh, it was. And it was very much a, just like the New 52 kind of was, very dark tone. And so you got this Batgirl, Stephanie Brown with Brian Miller, and she was very hopeful, very thing. And I remember thinking and realizing whenever I realized it was my favorite comic at the time, I said, man, that's the one book that I look forward to every single month.
Yeah.
And I even like to the point where I hunted down all of the back issues and stuff. So it's like, I got that entire run from him just because it's like, I realized that that was the one book that made me happy, made me smile while I was reading
that's
it.
That's really why I really liked, in that same time period, I really liked Power Girl.
Yeah.
And I really liked, they brought back.
It was Judd Winnick, right?
Yeah, Judd Winnick. He also wrote the, basically the B story during the Brightest Day series.
That's right.
For a whole year. Or wait, maybe it was half a year.
That was the Justice League International.
Yeah, Justice League International. Like, and both those stories, it's the same kind of thing, you know, and like this, while all this weird stuff's going on in the other books, you know, these are just like fun. Not necessarily, I mean, they're lighthearted in terms of, you know, like the serious, how serious they take themselves.
Right.
And that's what I like. You know, like you can be dealing with serious stuff, but also I'll be optimistic and playful about it. You know, like you don't have to, don't have to mope around and be really morose about it.
Right. And taking cues from like, you know, kind of exciting thriller, horror-esque things are one thing, but then making it a like... uncomfortable book to read or whatever, that's another different thing. So whenever the New 52 hit, we basically took everything and it seemed like DC had this directive that went out to everyone and they said, make it dark. make everything more like Christopher Nolan. And so, like, for, I guess, 2 years now, it's been like that in the DC New 52, which, honestly, there's been some great stories that have come out of it. There's been some amazing creative teams. And The Flash was that book with, you know, that actually, like, kind of kept me upbeat, kept me, you know, positive and stuff through that time. But now we've got Batgirl redesigned, and this is a book, it's by Cameron Stewart, Brendan Fletcher are the writers, Babs Tarr is the artist, and there's a lot of, you know, there's colors and stuff, but this is a huge team of people, and they've redesigned Batgirl into kind of a more positive thing. So she just went through this crazy, really dark kind of situation, and she's moved from, like, the downtown Gotham, like the mean streets of Gotham, into this suburb called Burnside. And it's a kind of a hipster, kind of upper class kind of neighborhood.
Is this a suburb of Gotham still?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's, like, just across across the river, across the, you know, to the mainland a little bit.
I see.
So this is a story where she's just moving in. A lot of, obviously, the first issue just is a lot of setup. It's a lot of introducing some new characters, setting up the universe. But it's like, this is not for, like, kids, I wouldn't say. But this is more for, like, she's in college. So, like, if you want to, like, relate it to that, where it's like somebody who's in college would really enjoy this book. College age and kind of above. But it's a very bright book. It's very fun. Art style is awesome. And the bad guy in this thing is social media-esque. Like, it's like he's you know, this terrible person who's gonna, you know, dump all this stuff all over the internet if he finds it on your phone or whatever. So it's like she's fighting very kind of updated and very, I don't even know, I guess modern bad guys. Like, where you're not fighting just some twisted, you know, maniac. He's a twisted maniac with a laptop and that sort of thing. So, which is nice, which appeals to both Batgirl fans from the New 52, also to Oracle fans from back in the day, where she was, you know, more of a computer-based character and that sort of thing. So she has all of the smarts, all of the knowledge, and is able to outsmart people.
That's awesome.
So not just a kick him in the face.
I'll have to check that out.
It's fun, man.
Starting with issue 35.
Yep. You can call it episode.
How long are they going to do this run?
I don't know. I mean, it's for the foreseeable future. I mean, if it's popular, they'll keep going with it.
So I haven't read Batgirl.
Okay.
What do you rate this?
Ooh, okay. I would rate this one at a nice 8.0. It's like, it's a definitely, hey, pick it up. But it's, again, it's definitely like a setup issue. It's definitely like, hey, because we have this new creative team, we have this new outfit, we have to set the groundwork to move forward with this character. So it's got less pages dedicated to actually being Batgirl and that sort of thing, and more dedicated to setting up the new tone and the new universe.
Cool, cool. Quick side question.
Yeah.
What happened to Francis Manapul on Batman?
I was wondering the same thing.
Gone?
I picked up my book, and it was like, I flipped to the last page because I was like, what is this? Is this just a one shot? But it looks like these two issues of Detective Comics will be with a different creative team.
Just the two.
And because, like, I looked on his Instagram and his Twitter, because it's like, obviously you'd find news about this there. Yeah. And he still posts pictures of his new pages for Detective Comics.
Huh.
So he's obviously still working on it, but maybe for 2 or 3 months, maybe not. Wild. So I don't know. It's weird. It's very strange because they had this amazing first run.
Wonder if he fell behind or something. Like, is that the only book he's doing, though?
Yeah, basically. I mean, you know, so I don't know. It may be a creative decision from DC to just around the holidays of break Halloween to, like, break it up a little bit, give people more time. We'll see. So,
yeah. Well, that's cool. So the previous writer of Batman before, Francis Manapul is just drawing. He's not writing right now. Who's writing Batman right now?
Well, actually, they're on Detective Comics. Francis Manapul and Brian Buccellato.
Okay, who's on Batman right now?
Batman is Scott Snyder.
Oh, it's still Scott Snyder.
And Greg Capullo.
So Scott Snyder just finished up a miniseries called The Wake.
The Wake.
And you really enjoyed that.
Yes, it was awesome. It was so much going on there, and I like Scott Snyder a lot.
Was it detective kind of stuff?
It was not detective kind of stuff. It was like sci-fi, where post-apocalyptic future, kind of mermaids have destroyed the world situation.
Like 6 issues?
It was, it might have been more than that. It might have been like eight or nine.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So it was a miniseries he just finished up for Image Comics.
Yes.
And he started a new one this month.
Actually, that was for Vertigo, I think.
Vertigo?
Yeah, this one's on Images.
I'm just, everything I'm spewing out of my mouth right now is just complete false.
So Scott Snyder and just finished up that. That was on Vertigo. The Witches, which is this book that we're holding right now, is actually on Image. And that one, he's teaming back up with Jock, who's the artist on this. Mm-hmm. Him and Jock worked together pre-New 52 on Detective Comics.
Okay.
They did a really cool horror-based Batman back then. Like, it was this Dick Grayson. It's interesting to see them make the transition between Dick and over to Bruce Wayne. Yeah. Very different styles, very different enemies that they faced. Dick is very, like, not sure of himself in that Batman kind of thing, because he didn't really necessarily want the cowl. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to be Batman, really. But Bruce was gone,
right?
For a while there. So
I loved, you know, whenever that was happening, you know, not to go too far off on this, but I loved the that aspect of Dick as Batman, and that he was trying to fill someone else's shoes, and not in the way where he, like, you know, felt like he couldn't. It was just like, you know, I want to do things differently, but this is how Bruce would do it, so I'm going to try to do that.
Right.
You know? I liked the interplay between him and Damian, you know?
Yeah.
And
for sure.
And that whole situation was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And I missed that in terms of Dick. I haven't read his new book, which
Nightwing and then Grayson now.
You know, Grayson, that's what I mean.
Grayson.
Yeah. Have you read that?
I've read the first issue. It's really good. It's like kind of a spy type thing. It's him with guns.
Which intrigues me.
It's cool. It's another effort to, like, brighten up the universe, to pull a Hawkeye, if you will, on the DC universe. It's interesting on the Detective Comics run with Scott Snyder and Jock that they took the city, and because the city was so twisted, Dick didn't know the city was so twisted, and that this, you know, it made things darker. It took things and twisted them in weird ways. Mm-hmm. Even though he'd been around, it had been Bruce that was bearing the brunt of all of that for his entire life. Mm-hmm. And so whenever that happened, it's interesting how that interplay was between him and the city, and that, you know, it was just shocking, just as shocking to us as readers as it was to him about what he had to face as Batman and that sort of thing. Whereas their run on with Bruce now is very much Bruce knows what he's getting into.
Yeah.
He's, you know, while he's headstrong, especially in like the Zero Year in the early on days of Batman, he does in fact realize what he's getting into, and it just by sheer force of will, he is going to, you know, do things.
I did find that curious sometimes though, being that, you know, Dick was Robin for so long.
Yeah.
And also Nightwing. Like, he should know the villains in Gotham.
But it's Batman is a completely different thing. It's like people target Batman specifically. And in that run specifically, there was a group of people that in the city, high rollers, if you will, where they would basically auction off unique pieces. And so they went after Batman to auction off Batman and auction off the identity of Batman. And so they captured Dick. And so there's like, it was this direct impact onto him as Batman that he had never experienced before as a different, you know,
that's true.
Hero.
That's true.
Cause he's the symbol for the city, man.
Yeah. There's additional scrutiny for sure.
Definitely. Anyway, so Witches yes. was billed as a book that you wouldn't want to take home to your family or to leave on like a coffee table somewhere. It's not for the lighthearted. It is a horror book. And I was, whenever I first read through it, like the first four pages, I was already super unsettled after the first four pages, just based on Jock's art and based on kind of what was going on in the plot line and the story. So,
yeah. He tells a story in the back of the book, like where this is kind of coming from, you know, like,
so right.
Basically like whenever he was growing up, his family had a cabin out in the woods.
Pennsylvania. Yeah. Yeah. Out in Pennsylvania.
Cabin in the woods. And the next door neighbor, and he would go out and, try to find witches in the woods and monsters in the woods.
They would go out with baseball bats with nails in them and, you know, that sort of thing.
You know, basically try to, like, you know, try to basically, I mean, it's you're going looking for a thrill is what you're doing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's something that's relatable. You know, I think, you know, like
You and I used to do that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, we would take groups of friends, like in high school. Like there was this place in Southern Illinois that everyone called the Hell House. It was like this abandoned factory or something like that. You know, we'd go out there and like sneak around. And,
miles there were like burnt out cars you were walking up to it.
You had to hike into this thing. There's all these burnt out cars and there's like all these chains hanging from the ceilings and all this kind of crazy stuff. All these outbuildings and it's cinder block walls, bare walls, just mud up to your ankles sometimes inside, and big pools of water and vats and what was that place?
I don't know.
You know, it was just crazy. Anyway, and like you'd be walking around there and like you go, shh, I think I heard something. And then like you'd hear like just a bump in the night.
A deer.
Yeah, it was probably a deer.
You don't even know though.
I mean, whatever. I mean, you hear something splashing in the water, or you hear just some kind of thud, or you hear anything and you're freaking out of
there. A dog bark, a coyote howl. Next thing, there's lots of that.
Next, yeah, you see some eyes. Like, who knows what it's probably a cuddly cat, you know? and you think it's, you know, just some kind of, it's something that's going to get you.
I want
to
say that every time that we left that place, and every time we would go, we would end up running back.
You just sprint the whole half mile or whatever it was back to the road, to the gate, like before you get there.
You have to jump the gate, past the no trespassing signs.
Oh, yeah. And it would, you know, it would always freak you out whenever there'd be cars around or something like that. You're like, who are they? You know, like, who else is out here? You know,
I mean, who else would dare to come out here?
Yeah, and so, and of course, you always go in the pitch black at night, you know, like, you never go during the day.
No. Even if you did, it would still be scary.
That's true. I mean, it was out in the middle of nowhere. And so I can relate to where he's coming from with that, where he's like, okay, well, I'm going to take this experience I had in the woods looking for, you know, trying to get a thrill, I'm going to turn this into a book. What if all this stuff were real?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it comes from. So that's really cool. It's a very sincere place, and it's a very cool place to come from.
It's very personal.
Personal, yes. That's a good word. Very personal place to come to this story.
Yes. On the other hand, like, I think I texted you, and I was like, dude, this is so unsettling. And I got to the point, like, while reading it, and then afterwards, that I was like, I don't know if I'm going to pick this up again just because I'm so unsettled by this. Like, I wouldn't say it's necessarily horrifying yet. Like, it's probably going to get there. Like, it's going to get to the point where it's like this thriller kind of horror comic type situation. Mm-hmm. But at this point, it's just like this weird, unsettled feeling, you know, as you read through it. Where like something's going on here, it's like you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, but it's like because of that, because it's so uncomfortable whenever I was reading it for however long it took, it probably didn't take that long, but it seemed like an eternity.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm gonna stick around. I'll probably get the next one, but I don't know that I'm gonna stick around for the whole thing.
I think you will. I think you'll end up picking it up.
You think?
I don't know. Like, I mean, this is the thing. Like, this is the thing with these, you know, you think about scary movies you like to watch or whatever, you know? So I think of like, you know, think of The Shining. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite movies just because as a film.
Yeah.
And then one of my favorite scary movies for sure. Like that movie, like everything's unsettling in that movie.
Oh yeah.
But you keep watching because you have to see how this turns out. And like, you're like, what is going on? I don't understand. And you know, like no matter if it's like blood pouring down the wall and down the hallway, you're like, what is going on?
It gnaws at your brain, and that's the best way I can say that Prometheus did the same thing to me whenever it came out.
Oh yeah,
and we
saw
it's like afterwards for days you're just like, what was that?
Yeah, there. And Alien. I think the best horror stories do that. You know, like you know there's going to be a train wreck. You're just waiting for it, and you have to watch. You can't stop. You know, like you know that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And things just build and build and build and build and build. Yeah. And, you know, I think we'll see if this does that properly.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of what this feels like. It feels like, okay, this is the beginning throes of a good horror flick.
Yeah.
And we're just getting ready to see what's going to happen.
You're just strapping in for the ride, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to pick it up again, and I'm probably going to pick up the whatever the first arc or whatever is, most likely.
I thought that this was going to be a miniseries, another one.
I think it's an ongoing. I want to say that it's like an ongoing, but it could be an ongoing similar to the way that he did American Vampire. Whenever he first broke into comics, Scott Snyder wrote American Vampire, and American Vampire goes in cycles. quote unquote.
Yeah.
Where American Vampire Cycle 1 is like 12 issues, and he took a major break between Cycle 1 and before when he started it's like Cycle 2. And he's taking a break like now
seasons
between.
Seasons of a TV show.
Exactly. So it's like, I think it's an ongoing, but it's an ongoing maybe in that perspective where it's like, hey, he's going to work on it until he comes to the conclusion that he wants to come to for this arc. And then outside of that, he's going to take a break, work on it, figure it out, do it again.
If he does it as an ongoing in that way, I think like I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
I don't think I could go on with the story for like the next 6 years.
I don't think so either. But it's like you look again. I think he likes to work that way where it's like he likes to – even with like Batman, they took a month off last month. Somebody else wrote it and did it. And he said that was just because they wanted to get the next story arc for Batman where it needed to be. Then he wanted to take a breather, figure it out.
Well, I mean, monthly ongoing for like people like Batman and Superman, like that makes sense. You know, right. Like that's how – I mean they are characters that can carry five or six books. Like that's why there's like five or six Batman books.
Right.
This isn't necessarily that, you know, like, I don't know that, you know, if this is still going 2 years from now, you're like, yeah, I'm really intrigued by the story. And, you know, like these kinds of stories need a definite end.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they need to have these arcs.
Yeah.
And be able to end properly. Like, okay, you think about most of the horror movies that you watch.
Yeah.
Most of the people die in those.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't make it out alive most of the time.
Well, even like Walking Dead, it's like there is a definite end to a season where you take a break. And while the horror never ends, because that was the main concept, like that was the original idea.
Yeah.
While the horror never ends, there is major breaks in between them.
Yeah.
You know, and even on the even in the comic, there are entire
it's like this is a new issues. Story.
Yeah, there's entire issues where people don't die, you know, or like whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like even in those situations where you know that this is going on and going on forever, if it keeps on this course, there's definite breaks to the story where it's like, okay, let's figure out what happens next. Yeah. Let's, you know, take a look.
So this, you know, this book has basically like trees that are eating people and
they're the witches
and deer that are like diseased and coughing up bloody things.
People pledging other people to the trees somehow.
Yeah. Like this weird, you know, like, who knows, dude?
The whole idea, I guess, and I think we talked about this months ago on the podcast, was the whole idea of he likes to take these mythological creatures and say, what would this be like in the universe? So he did mer people with the Wake, vampires with American Vampire, and so on and so forth. So this one is his take on witches, where he's saying, what if what we know as witches weren't actually the witches? They were only the people that worshipped the deities or the weird supernatural beings that are actually witches.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I mean, it's
twisted.
It's definitely playing on taking something and putting his own spin on it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if this ends up being interesting. It might just end up being, you know, bat crazy the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, and you're just like, I don't even know.
In which case, no sense. Why would I be uncomfortable every month for, you know, 30 or 40 minutes while I read it?
So, exactly.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll keep everyone updated.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. So, I mean, just a final word of caution.
Yes.
Like this is a, you know, a horror novel. You already said it.
Yes.
And so like, this is kind of like we said with Gone Girl, you know, like that's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say if you're, you know, a comics lover and you love reading Snoopy comics and, you know, like
Archie,
even Batman.
Batgirl or Batman. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, this is a little darker. You know, just like,
well, like I was saying, it's like, I love Batman. Batman's my favorite character. I read them all. Like I read all the Batman stuff. But this got to the point where I'm still sitting here contemplating, like, man, do I really, am I on board with this?
I mean,
you know, that sort of thing.
You don't have to be on board with it. I'm not saying you have to be on board with it.
But yeah, no.
You know, the one thing is, you know, like, you know, yeah, just go into it knowing that they're trying to make you, to creep you out.
Yeah.
Like, just like other
to unsettle you.
Horror movies or right. Something like that. Yes. And so, you know, this is not necessarily
a teen comic, necessarily.
Yeah, this is definitely a rated. If it was a movie, it would be rated R.
For
sure. It'd be a hard R.
Yep, for sure.
All right, so let's rate this.
Let's rate witches.
Yes. What do you rate it?
I rate it, probably a, wow, that's a hard one. 7.
Okay. I rate it a 7, for sure. Yeah. This is why, you know, like, you know, horror comics don't necessarily appeal to everyone.
Right.
And while this is intriguing, it's not really a must read.
Mm-mm.
And it, you know, like the characters aren't super strong. Like you have very quick introductions to them for sure.
Right.
there's the beginnings of a mystery, but it's not intriguing enough, and I don't care enough necessarily right now to
go on higher. Like, if you didn't read the next one, it's not like your world would end.
Not at all.
And that's kind of where I was at with the whole thing too. So yeah, I'm on par there.
There's definitely a mystery there, you know, and like something that's intriguing. You know, I don't know that I'm sold on it yet. Well, that's it for this week. Be sure to check us out online at stayontargetpodcast.com for the entire month of Righttober.
Righttober, yep.
And we are launching our Arrow on Target and Flash on Target podcast this week.
Yep.
And we'll keep those going for this entire season for both of those shows. And yeah.
I mean, that's everything. What's Twitter? We can follow us on Twitter.
Yep.
JohnWright777.
Yep. ChrisWright250.
And Stay on Target Pod.
Yes.
That's it for this week. We'll see you next time on Stay on Target.